Jeff and Eric noticed one day that nobody on the internet talked about movies, so they had to find a way. They'll podcast thoughts on new movies they've discovered through autumn, winter, spring, and summer on Fridays. And when you run out of films you love to view, tune into jokes, playing games, all this and more you'll find contained on PBS with Bear and Snyder.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. I am your host, Jeff Bear. Here is my co-host, Eric D. Snyder.
Hello, I'm Eric D. Snyder, one of the hosts of this show, here with my co-host, Jeff Bear. And my other co-host, Dog Cat. You guys can't see, but it's very cute. He's sitting on the desk here next to the computer. He just wants to be close to me, because who doesn't?
Eric, I would just like to say thank you. I was going to interrupt the show at some point to let people understand that you've totally become one of those cat people.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have to. You proved it.
Yeah. Hey, what's your baby doing?
See, that's the thing. I never talk about the fact that I have two kids. Whereas, like, and it hasn't changed me one bit. Whereas
that's
with
true.
You, it's like you're having conversations with the cat. You're being like, oh, did you just say that, cat?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the cat
mm-hmm.
just meowed. What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't say anything. It's a meow.
You know, Dog Cat is the only friend I have who will sometimes begin eating his own butthole while I'm talking to him. Since I stopped hanging out with Jeff Wells, anyway.
Wow, but see, then you just use the word friend. So at one point now, people believe that you were friends with Wells.
Oh, that's true. Well, it was just for a joke.
Yeah. No, I understand.
Just for the sake of comedy.
Still, the fiction hurts in this case. Just imagining you and him, like, on a couch hanging out.
Oh, man. Whatever. Anyway, let's talk about movies.
Yeah, we have some of those this
uh-huh.
week.
Mm-hmm.
We do.
Good thing, since it's a movie podcast.
Otherwise, goodness.
We lucked out there.
We'd already be saying our goodbyes.
Mm-hmm. Hail Caesar.
Hail Caesar. Hail, comma, Caesar!
Exclamation point.
That's the proper way. Please do it that way.
Hail Caesar!
Hail.
From the Coen brothers, Joel and Ethan. Do you know how many movies this is for them?
11.
17.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they pile up. I think that's more than I thought, too.
Yeah.
And this one is set.
Oh, wait. Were you counting them all?
Yes, all of their movies.
I was not.
you were only counting the ones that you could remember off the top of your head.
I was only counting 11 of them.
Gotcha, yes. All right, well, agree to disagree.
Yep.
This is set in Hollywood in 1951, the golden age of Holler, I guess. Is that the golden age? I forget the different ages. Anyway.
It's the golden age.
One of the golden ages.
It's the golden age.
And this movie, as I've been thinking about this movie.
Oh, no.
Hmm.
You're convincing.
You don't like what I think about movies?
It normally doesn't. The more you think about a film, the more our opinion diverges.
But the Coens are different from most filmmakers. Almost all of their movies I've enjoyed more after I saw it a second time. And as I was thinking about this one and how it relates to some of their other movies, to me, I think this is the movie where they're saying, because they've talked about, like, where do you go for answers? Like, A Serious Man was all about accept the mystery, and Inside Llewyn Davis, he didn't know what to do with his life, and No Country for Old Men, you just have to take what's coming. The universe is random, and you can't control it. So where do you look for answers? Movies.
Yes.
The Coens, this is like their Bible. It's like a compilation of some of their things they've done before that kind of come together into a unified theme, sort of.
Oof.
Here's
the thing.
This is where they go for answers. This is the only thing that makes sense in this crazy universe of ours. Is in the movies.
I will say this. Let's see. So No Country. Let's just recap a little bit. Mm-hmm. No Country for Old Men. 2007.
Yes.
I really liked it. Would you say the same?
That you really liked it? I don't remember.
And that you really liked
yes,
it.
Yes, I loved it.
Yes. Burn After Reading, I think it was like maybe it was a six, but then it had that amazing ending that might have bumped it up a little bit. But I haven't gone back to watch it, and I haven't wanted to.
Yeah, Burn After Reading was one of their lesser films. Yeah. So it was only like a B minus.
So let's start with Burn After Reading. So Burn After Reading, let's say B minus. A Serious Man, rewatchable, kind of addictive, very weird. It grew on me. And yeah, I think I gave it an 8. True Grit, loved it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 9.
Yeah.
Inside Llewyn Davis,
yes.
Full out worship, it's a 10. Hail Caesar, it's almost like they've reset now for me, where it's like they've gone back to that Burn After Reading level of like, you can't say it's not a good movie. You can't say it. And you can't say there aren't great moments in it.
Right.
But it does – I want to say it's them, not me, as far as needing to revisit it this time. That's how it feels compared mm-hmm. to some of the others.
And I'm saying it's you, not them.
Right. Here's the thing. Overall, I would classify this as I would think of the word silly.
It's a screwball comedy, but it's like at half speed. It's not madcap like you would think.
This is the thing, and not only is it not madcap, it takes them a while to express that they want to be silly. Like it in the beginning, you're like, hang on, do you think that's a joke? Like that's how it feels.
And I
kind of feel like I'm waiting. And is it like, oh, okay, Josh Brolin, is he likable or not? Does that matter? Is it a day in the life of or not? Does that matter? Like,
yeah,
it's kind of that thinking of like, what am I hanging out with you guys for? Besides all of these big names, and these quality filmmakers,
it's this all behind the scenes at the studio, and there's a lot of parts that seem. Like at first, there's parts that seem unnecessary because we don't know what's going on yet. Like we're setting up, we meet Scarlett Johansson, who's like this Esther Williams bathing beauty.
Everybody is like somebody. Like if somebody's truly familiar with the 50s in Hollywood, I wouldn't say I am, but everything rang familiar. Like okay, I bet this is kind of like this
types,
thing that
yeah.
happened.
Right, but there's all these different ones, and we're not sure what they all have to do with each other. We know the main thing kind of is George Clooney's character Baird Whitlock. You know I love the names in this movie.
The names are great in this movie.
Baird Whitlock, big star. He's in a movie that they're filming now called Hail Caesar, one of those Roman / biblical epics.
Think Ben-Hur.
Like Ben-Hur, yeah. And he has gone missing from the set.
Right.
So we know that's kind of the main plot, but even that's not really the main plot, as it turns out. I see why that's the one they have to put in the trailers, because it's kind of the closest thing to a through line, but it's really about Eddie Mannix, Josh Brolin's character, who is this mm-hmm. mid-level studio executive whose job is to fix problems 24 hours a day.
He's wrangling the stars,
keeping their sins out of the tabloids, managing their images, all that kind of stuff.
Doing whatever he needs to do, that kind of thing. But at the same point, he somewhat has scruples. He goes to confessional. He loves his wife. Like there's these things that are layered about him, but yet it feels like such a odd, like everything about the movie feels utterly fictitious on purpose. I think.
Yeah.
But it's all artifice.
Yes.
And so then it's this weird vibe of once sincerity enters the picture.
But and I think that like Eddie Mannix. He does have scruples, but I don't think there's some lying involved in his job.
Yeah, but like
but it's more like image management. He's not right. His job is not inherently unscrupulous. It's hectic, and there's a lot of dumb, seemingly minor problems or problems that seem minor in the grand scheme of things. But that ultimately is what the movie is about. Is that well? But this is what I do. This is what I do for a living, and it keeps me busy and keeps me happy. And this is where there's some stability and normalcy in my life. So this is what I do.
Right, and there's something about it where he thinks there, like he can't put his finger on it, but he feels like it's a purpose that he serves for a greater good.
Right,
and he can't fully justify it, but mm-hmm. it's like
it's just movies. Movies are frivolous. Yeah,
you're sucking me into this movie. This movie's starting to sound really good now, Eric. Okay, so anyway, we got Baird.
Maybe he goes missing. Again.
Here's one. Okay, this is a perfect example. Very early on, before we have a sense of who is what and what we're supposed to care about, there's this weird scene where Wayne Knight, Newman from Seinfeld, is an extra in a movie, and he keeps getting accidentally bumped by George Clooney's sword.
Right.
The comedy is off on that scene. It doesn't work yet. I can't figure out exactly why. And part of the reason is Wayne Knight is overreacting and no one else is reacting. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of thought about that a little bit more as the movie went on. It's the underreactions across the board of these characters that make it feel like it's at a slower, silly pace. Mm-hmm. And it's like, wait, why did you do this? I want to talk to you about it, but the Coens don't necessarily want to, and blah blah blah. But yeah, it does
have a strange energy because it's set up like a screwball comedy and all these moving parts and stuff. But then yeah, it doesn't move as fast as zany as screwball comedies usually do. And I remember there were a few scenes that ended that seemed like they needed a punchline but didn't get one. That just sort of ended.
Yes.
And then you get into the other things. I think it's like they're combining this screwball Raising Arizona kind of silliness with the existential dilemmas they get into in other movies, and it's a strange combination.
Yeah.
Which is why I say that it's sort of like their compilation of greatest hits. It's kind of all these things they've done separately before. Now they kind of put them together, and I don't know how much it works, but I am very intrigued, and I like the movie. I like the movie, and I want to see it again.
I
keep hearing from people, friends of ours, colleagues and stuff, who talk about laughing from beginning to end, big belly laughs, and audiences roaring with laughter.
Right.
And our audience was not especially roaring.
I think that's full. They're just all lying, is what I think. If somebody worshipped this movie and thought it was great the first time through, I think they're just lying, probably to themselves, but maybe to us as well. But here's the thing: there's more than what we just referred to. Here's another tiny misstep. One, Scarlett Johansson's character is simply just not present enough to really feel necessary.
She's an example of one of the everyday stupid problems that Mannix has to deal with.
But wasn't it that weird thing where they're doing the classic mermaid water scene that I feel like at this point we can't do anymore. Like, we've seen too many recreations of the classic swimming water scene almost. But at the end of it, she like throws her crown and it knocks somebody in the head.
Yeah.
And that is another prime example of it just felt like missed humor as opposed to the Coen brothers being on top of their game.
That gag didn't quite land.
Like, that was the first take. Now let's try that again, but we need to punch it up. But anyway, those are tiny little things. Hobie Doyle, played by, for me, unknown, Alden
Ehrenreich.
And do you know him? Are you familiar with him?
He was in Stoker. He was in Beautiful Creatures.
Remember that
teen romance thing that was actually kind of okay?
You loved that movie.
I love it. It was okay.
Oh,
he had a part in Blue Jasmine. He was, what's her name's son.
All right.
Anyway, he's fairly new, but yeah.
Yeah.
This is his big breakout thing.
I think so. And he's purposely adorable as an aw shucks cowboy who is thrown into the studio system and therefore then suddenly finding himself in a debonair period piece.
Period drama. Directed by Lawrence Lorenz, played by Ralph Fiennes.
Oh, Rafe. Why couldn't we have, I don't know, 20 times more Rafe in this movie?
I could have seen 20 more minutes just of Lawrence Lorenz and Hobie Doyle talking to each other and trying to understand each other and how to deliver the lines. And
not only trying to talk to each other, but both simply trying. It was so great that neither one their workmanship together in that scene was just so adorable. It's ridiculous because they're both desperately stuck and both trying and just utterly failing to connect with each other. And it is a joy.
And that's one of the Coen brothers' favorite things, or it has one of their favorite things of repeating dialogue. Where you keep saying the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
Mirthless chuckle. mirthless chuckle.
I personally also Channing Tatum's Bert Gurney. Bert, when he's in this movie, finally, it made me feel like, yes, this musical number. Give me everything about this. Just make a musical, because you guys are really good at all of this.
He's a song and dance man. Dressed as a sailor. Doing a sailor musical.
No Dames or Dames or whatever the heck the song name was.
Yeah. Hanging out at a sailor's bar called the Swing and Dinghy.
Channing Tatum really impressed me with that scene. He really did. Like, his singing voice, he was finally, for me, a normal-looking movie star, whereas I feel like he's always been an odd-looking movie star for some reason.
He has a weird face. I've always thought that.
Okay, good.
The musical number that we see in this movie that he's shooting, I wrote down the name of the movie. No, I can't find it. It was funny. But the scene, this musical number, is a pretty standard Hollywood, you know, mm-hmm. song and dance number. And I kept thinking it was going to be funnier. I kept waiting for it to kind of turn into a parody of dance numbers, which I realize is that's not what it was ever going for. But it kept reminding me of, like, in Top Secret or Naked Gun or something, where it would turn into that. But then it wasn't a parody. It wasn't really funny, particularly. And then sort of did its thing, and then it was over, and okay, that was fine. But
and what's weird about it is, I thought it was getting to the point of, okay, this is enlightening us on potentially who Bert is, what's going on in his private life, things to that effect. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't.
Nope.
At best, it was a misdirect. Otherwise, it was just an entertaining idea for one scene in a movie, and it didn't quite fit. But they really liked it.
It's kind of the same as the Scarlett Johansson thing. It's this big number that accurately recreates the sort of number in those old movies, and the character isn't hugely important, but is just one of the many little fires that mm-hmm. Eddie Mannix has to put out every day.
There's also an in-and-out narration that if you're not going to narrate a movie for 45 minutes, don't narrate a movie.
I generally agree.
Unless it's just at the very beginning and very end. I
generally agree. Oh, that's the worst. Very beginning and very end is where you didn't need a narrator at all.
Okay, that's true.
We'll talk about the choice later. And I generally agree. I hate that. In this one, it seemed like it was a reference to the Ben-Hur, the big epic types of movies, which this, Hail Caesar, it also ends in kind of the way that those movies end, only it's not about, like, finding religion or whatever. It's about accepting movies, your life in Hollywood.
Oh, also, they very amusingly touch on the Communist Party on occasion.
Communists.
But it's only on occasion, again. Like, four scenes are flat out amazing, is probably how I felt. And otherwise, I was just waiting and wondering what was going on. And I'm either going to really dig in the next time I see it and feel the exact same, if not stronger, that it's a work in progress movie, or I am going to find a new appreciation. I don't know. Only time will tell.
Yeah, and I have to go back to. Yeah, I'm looking at the list now. All the most recent ones: Inside Llewyn Davis, True Grit, Serious Man, No Country. Those I all after the first time I liked them, but I thought there's something I'm missing here. And then the second time it came together for me more. So I kind of, with the Coens, have come to trust them that if I'm not, they're smarter than I am, is what it comes down to. Joel and Ethan Coen are smarter than I am. And I've come to trust that usually when I don't quite get it, it's me, not them. They've had a couple of movies that were not great. Even after giving them a second chance. But for the most part, they're like 15 for 17. I mean, they're, or close to it, anyway.
Yeah, they're probably close to it. They have a great percentage. You're absolutely right. And again, their recent track record does bode well, but that doesn't mean I enjoyed myself as much as I assumed I would by sitting down to a movie with this cast, with this topic, with these directors, with writers. So for me, first time around, it's a 6 out of 10, which again, not awful at all. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's a surprise when you're sitting down to the Coen brothers because, they're in my wheelhouse.
They're always keeping us on our toes, those Coen brothers. I give it a B.
I'm afraid to give it that B minus, huh? Okay.
No, I was going to give it a B plus and took it down to B.
Ooh.
Because so there.
All right. Great.
What did you say? Six?
I did. I said six.
And then there's also a movie called Pride and or Prejudice and Time Permitting Zombies.
No commas, right?
I don't think so. No.
No Oxford comma going on there? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had to make a choice.
Yeah.
Tuesday night, you want your zombies or you want your Coen brothers? A no-brainer.
One might say, yeah. And it was apparently that way in most markets in the country. Universal and Lionsgate,
both, so,
or not Lionsgate, whoever it was, Screen Gems, insisted, oh, I've got to be Tuesday night. There was nothing Monday.
There was nothing Monday. two different times during the movie, during a slow part, I was like, I wonder if I made the right choice. I wonder if I would have enjoyed I wonder if Pride and Prejudice and Zombies does its job. Like, it, you know, knows what it is, sticks to that, and there's fun to be had.
Knows so what it is, sticks to what it is, and is easy enough for me to like on one view.
Right.
Right.
So anyway, it was that weird thing. Like, I never would have thought that I would have thought that.
Mm-hmm.
But I did. I had that thought.
And so, yeah, we didn't see Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. I'll catch it this weekend, I think, because that's apparently what I do now.
It is what you do.
And anyway, that's why we didn't see it, because they decided that it has to screen at the exact same time as the other one.
I could be convinced to see that with you if it was, like, late at night or something. You know, all the way at 9 p.m. or something.
Yeah, we'll see.
Maybe. That late. Do you think you could stay up?
And then another movie that we were able to see, actually originally scheduled at the same time as the other two, but they moved it, The Choice. And you made the choice to just not see it.
Eric,
I
have a question for you.
Yes.
Did I make the right choice?
I don't know. It depends on your criteria.
Whatever
you were doing, not seeing it was probably a better use of your time, yes.
Nice.
Tell me
all about it.
Well, it's based on a Nicholas Sparks book, but it's not as crazy as you would hope.
Oh.
Not as many really no insane things happen.
Wait,
unfortunately.
What? Okay, but what's the twist?
No, the twist is that it's a manipulative pile of garbage that wants to have it both ways. Make you sad about one thing and then make you happy because, oh, the sad thing didn't happen after all.
Wait, it didn't happen? But I thought they said it did.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Oh, wait, what's going on about narration?
Oh, Dog Cat is narrating. The main guy in it, Travis, Benjamin Walker is the actor. He played Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
In that mashup.
He starts out narrating. He's in North Carolina, so he talks like that. And he's like, you know, the whole thing about life, it all comes down to choices.
Oh, boy.
There's one choice after another. And then at the end, he comes back to say, so like I was saying, choices. Or whatever. This guy.
Are you serious?
Basically. He's in North Carolina. He's a veterinarian. He's non-committal to women. He's got a long time on again, off again girlfriend who's not really in the picture.
Is that Monica or is that Steph?
That's Monica.
Who is that?
That's Monica.
Oh,
yeah,
that Monica.
And he's the kind of guy who, like, women always. No one ever says no to him because he's handsome and charming and everything. And I have to say, this is very shallow. This fellow here, Benjamin Walker, is not as handsome as the movie thinks he is. It's awkward to play a character who's more handsome than you are. Because everyone keeps talking about how all the women can't say no to him. And it's like,
Oh,
he's average looking, I guess.
Hey, interruption here. Monica is played by Alexandra
Daddario.
Guys like her a lot.
They do. Yeah. She's
not
in the movie
very
much.
After San Andreas, I was surprised to find out how much guys like her. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
She's hardly in the movie. She doesn't matter. Oh, okay. The one who matters is what's her name? Gabby. Teresa Palmer, who looks like Kristen like if Kristen Stewart could smile, that would be Teresa Palmer.
She's she was Warm Bodies.
Sure.
And the very forgettable I Am Number 4.
And she is a med student who lives in the house next door to Travis. And they meet because her dog has gotten pregnant and she blames Travis's dog. on it. Travis's dog. Travis is a vet, so of course his own dog is neutered or spayed, whatever you do to boy dogs. Neutered. Yeah. Why Gabby didn't have her dog fixed, especially if she's going to let it just out roam the neighborhood. This is irresponsible pet ownership.
Man, you're getting fired
up.
It
really bothered me that nobody ever mentioned, hey, maybe you should have gotten your stupid dog fixed so she wouldn't get pregnant.
Dummy. All right. There's also Maggie Grace. I believe she's from Heroes. Is that how I know her?
She's from Lost. Or maybe. She was.
Oh, I know her from Lost. That's right. Yeah. Maggie Grace has the face of the woman who gets in between them and tries to steal the man. Tell me she does that.
No, she.
Oh.
She's his sister.
And she's not trying to sleep with him? Is that what you're saying?
No, not trying to sleep with him.
Not even once.
But when she first shows up, of course, Gabby, the new neighbor, thinks that it's a girlfriend. It's like, and she's all offended because he's been flirting with her. And oh, now this girl shows up. Never mind, Gabby has a boyfriend. It's what? Tom Welling.
Superman?
Mm-hmm. Well, he's just playing Tom Welling in this one.
Oh.
And he's a doctor. And he goes away for a few weeks, and Gabby and Travis kind of have a bit of a fling, fall in love, et cetera.
Plenty of time. Plenty of time.
Now, I need to tell you, at the very beginning of the movie, when he's talking about choices, he's like, I got a big choice to make today. And we see him drive up to the hospital, says hi to Tom Welling, a doctor there, and he's got flowers. He says, I just need to talk to her. And so we're thinking, oh, I bet we know what this choice is.
She's about to die.
In a coma, and he has to decide whether to pull her off the plug or something.
Yeah.
Because he says, I just need to talk to her. And Tom Welling's like, sure, if you think that'll if that's what you need to do. And we feel bad. Then we jump back 7 years.
Oh.
So it's 7 years. And so all this, they meet, and we'll employ the Nicholas Sparks rule, which is that we give all spoilers.
Yes. That is our Nicholas Sparks rule.
Spoiler alert. This is not going to be as crazy as you'd hope. This is not as crazy as the movies that inspired the Nicholas Sparks rule.
You know what? We both saw a Nicholas Sparks movie once that we felt the same way. Not that I can name it, but we were both like, there was no crazy twist.
So they meet and they find that they eventually, of course, get married. There's some drama with Tom Welling, but that gets sorted out and they get married. And then they have kids. And they have kids who are clearly much more than 7 years old, which is the oldest they could be for it having been 7 years ago. But anyway, we get up to the present again, and Gabby.
Yeah.
Car accident, obviously. Car accident, driving home from the restaurant where she was waiting for Travis to show up, but he was late at the vet's office with an emergency cat situation.
Oh, he had a reasonable reason?
Okay. Yeah, he's not a bad guy. No, totally reasonable. But of course, he blames himself. He blames himself, of course.
No, you just move on.
No, he blames his wife is in a coma, Jeff!
Nope.
She's been a vegetable, and for 90 days. And after 90 days, they usually don't come back from being vegetables. And so he's got to decide, should I pull the plug? But so then when the movie comes back around to where it started, where he goes to the hospital, he's like, I got to make a big choice. And he goes to talk to his comatose wife. The choice he's talking about is he's not sure if he should buy a new truck or rebuild the engine on his old truck. So the movie pulled a little switcheroo there.
I'm stopping you right there. That's not true. Tell me the truth.
The movie pulled a switcheroo. But then also, he is worried about whether to pull the plug on her. So the movie tried to fake us out. Like all along, we're thinking, oh, that's going to be what the choice is. And then it says that it's not, but it actually really is. And so he just doesn't pull the plug. He's not sure. He can't ready to give up. And then she wakes up. There's a scene, first of all, of him tearful at his mother's grave, talking about how he's not ready to lose his wife, the love of his life, too. And it's a pretty good emotional scene by this actor, this unhandsome actor. And but then he goes his wife wakes up. So we get to have it both ways. We get to be all sad because his wife is dying, but then all happy because she's not dead.
I'm not happy. There's another twist.
Hmm.
Tom Wilkinson's in this movie as a guy named Shep.
Dr. Shep, that's Travis's father, also a veterinarian. Father-son veterinarian practice.
You gotta pass it down.
Sure. And Tom Wilkinson, love to see Tom Wilkinson, unnecessary in the movie. And there's a couple of scenes about him. He's got a widow who keeps bringing her dog in to the vet because she likes him. There's a couple of scenes of that. Don't matter. Don't need any of that. Irrelevant. I really feel like those scenes were added just to give Tom Wilkinson something else to do. So, I mean, I've seen worse of these movies. I'll say the women in the audience, there was lots of, aw, there was,
veterinarian.
From the teenage girls earlier, but from the women. And the movie is fairly romantic. And I get if you're into some mushy romance, with the lines that, you know, he says a line early in the movie and then it comes back again later. That, like, kind of becomes their thing they say to each other. Becomes sweet like couples do. There's some of that.
All right.
So, yeah. It's a C. It has puppies.
I'm assuming a lot.
Only a few. But they're very cute.
What's the worst animal in this movie?
The worst animal?
Yeah. There's got to be something where I had to do something that was too extreme to some weird animal.
No. One interesting moment is where he has a client whose pet lizard has died. And so his dad, Tom Wilkinson, swaps it out for an identical lizard that's not dead. And Travis is like, well, we can't lie to that little girl. And his dad is like, there are enough terrible things in the world that we can't do anything about. If we can spare, you know, a little child some pain over, you know, some minor thing, why not do it? And so he goes out and says, hey, your lizard's all better.
I do not like that at all.
But it fits with the overall theme of the movie being stupid. So it all meshes together there.
Yeah. Nice.
So that's the choice. I also went and caught up with a couple of things that I missed.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about those things. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you very briefly.
Okay.
One of them was 50 Shades of Black,
mm-hmm.
which is terrible. Parody of 50 Shades of Grey.
Marlon Wayans is the only one allowed to make parodies, right? That's the rule?
What do you mean?
Like, nobody else is making parodies except for him, it feels like.
Those Seltzer Friedberg guys are still around, I think.
All right.
Theirs tend to go straight to video, though. But yeah, Marlon Wayans, he made A Haunted House and then A Haunted House 2 and now this. And it's a really lame, obvious 50 Shades of Grey parody. And it feels late. Like, a year is a fast turnaround time for a movie. But for making fun of something, like, people quit making jokes about 50 Shades of Grey a year
ago.
Yeah,
it is not on the radar.
Played out. Especially if the jokes you're going to make are just the obvious ones, like, oh, Christian Grey sure is a stalker.
Yeah.
So that was the D. And then The Boy. The Boy is a thriller about a girl who goes to England for like a nanny job. And it turns out that the boy she's taking care of is a doll about the size of a 6-year-old boy.
Ooh.
Named Brahms. And we come to find out the real Brahms died in a fire some years ago, and his parents have had this doll ever since. So they treat it like a real kid.
Okay.
And so Do
we know what happened to the previous nanny?
I don't think that's not an issue.
Really?
I don't think so. And it's a silly premise, but at the same time, creepy dolls. Creepy dolls are funny, because what creepy if this dolls. Doll is alive? What if it does seem like it's moving sometimes? And the movie does a half-decent job of playing with all that. And, like, don't hurry out and see it. But it's like a B-minus, C-plus. When it's on Redbox or whatever, totally worth watching.
Oh, this is definitely this actress's big break. This is her big move.
Is it?
Lauren Cohen.
Hmm.
Yeah, because otherwise it was Van Wilder 2.
Oh.
Death Race 2.
Ooh.
And something called Destiny.
Well, good for her. Good for you, Lauren Cohen. Yeah, it's not bad. Not great.
Oh, this is Maggie from Walking Dead.
Sure, Maggie from Walking Dead. So those are the two movies I caught up with. Can I also tell you an anecdote, something that happened to me?
I would love to hear that.
When I went to see 50 Shades of Black
mm-hmm.
at one of our Portland movie theaters, the Lloyd Center, for you who are familiar with the area, it's 1 in the afternoon. And I'm walking up to the theater, and a bum approaches me, and he says, "Hey, excuse me." And I said, I don't have any cash." And he says, "No, I don't want any money." And so now I'm intrigued. All right, well, what do you want? And he says, "I just want to see a movie. I just want to get out of the cold and see a movie." And nobody had ever asked me for a movie ticket before.
No.
So I was surprised by the novelty of it, and knowing that there's no way that he could misspend that. Like, he can't take a movie ticket and go spend it on crack or whatever.
Or hooch,
yeah. He smelled like hooch at 1 in the afternoon, by the way. And so I was like, all right, sure, I'll buy you a movie ticket. Why not? So we go inside, and I said, what movie do you want to see? And he says, The Revenant. And we look in it's actually called The Revenant. But
Who said what now?
He said the Revelant. And I was, and we looked, and one had started like an hour ago, and the next one wasn't for a couple of hours. So we're looking, okay, what starts now or what just started? And we're looking at the options, and he says, well, what are you seeing? And I said, 50 Shades of Black. And he said, that looks terrible. I was like, well, you know, it's my job. I'm a movie critic. It's what I do. Also, as someone on Twitter pointed out, apparently beggars can be choosers.
Mm-hmm.
So I wound up buying him a ticket for the fourth wave or fifth wave. Oh, how many waves is it?
The fifth.
The fifth.
Well, we haven't seen
because it was the one that, it was the one that had just started. He didn't want to see 50 Shades of Black, no matter what, although that was also just starting. So he went with fifth wave. And that was the end of our interaction until two nights later, I was at the Lloyd Center again for a screening of a movie, for these screenings we go to. After the movie, and I'm leaving, and there he is at the exit door, and it seems to me like he's trying to get in through the exit door, like trying to sneak in like kids do. Because he's as I come out and other people are coming out, and he's like there hovering by the door, kind of holding it open. He's like, I'm just waiting for my wife. And I recognize him. I said, oh, hey, you're that guy I bought a movie ticket for. And he goes, oh, yeah, thanks. And I said, are you trying to sneak in now? And he goes, no, I'm waiting for my wife. I don't think – homeless people don't have wives.
I mean, they could have, like, teammates.
Maybe. But, like, what? What, your wife was in the movies? You and your wife went and saw a movie, and you came outside, and you're waiting for her to come out of the bathroom
after choosing,
by holding the exit door open.
Oh, yeah. No. It's not very likely. I agree with you.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was – there we go. It's my new friend.
Now are you happy or sad?
Neither one.
Okay.
The time that I dealt with him, he got into the movies, fair and square. I bought a ticket. Oh, I even, with my Regal Club card, I got a free popcorn for him.
Oh my gosh. Fate. There's your God for you right there.
So that was fine. And whatever he did after that, that's none of my concern.
That's something that religion should focus on. Do something good, get free popcorn.
It is kind of what it – like cosmically, metaphorically, it's kind of what it comes down to.
This is what I'm saying.
You got to wait till after you die to get the popcorn. But allegedly, there's tons of popcorn waiting for you.
Oh, wait. No, you got the popcorn now.
That's the thing. It would be a lot easier, if we just get it now.
Right.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Like if you go – like churches should start doing this, like walking around and being like, oh, that person just did something nice. Here's some popcorn.
Yeah.
Although I mean, I don't like movie theater popcorn. I don't really like popcorn
particularly.
Yeah.
So that wouldn't work on me.
It wouldn't entice me. It would actually bug me.
And most of the things that I would want as my rewards are the things that the religion is telling me to stay away from in the first place.
That's true. You know what? This would be a good racket for the other team.
Satan?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Correct. Giving people indulgent rewards for doing good things?
No, doing bad things. You'd switch the whole system.
Actually, what they would do is they would give you a reward for doing something good, but the reward would be something that would harm you. Like they would give you, nice work. Here, have an alcohol addiction or whatever, you know. Have some pornography.
Oh, wait, what? Satan. Ugh, yeah. Satan.
So that's the movies.
Movies.
Now, question of the week.
Oh, goodness, people. We asked you a question of the week.
You weren't having it.
I wasn't.
I mean the listeners.
Oh, yeah, no. But then I decided not to have it.
It was your idea. Not to point blame, but this question of the week was your idea.
No, I know. I brought the weak sauce, and this is what I get. And now we're going to demand more.
Because the question we asked, for the record, was we said remake a Coen Brothers movie, just as a hypothetical exercise. Would I take this, the fact that one person responded, Emily said, tell the story of a serious man backwards. Keep everything else the same. I don't know what that means, but all right. But I take the lack of response to mean that even as an academic exercise, people were not interested even hypothetically talking about remaking a Coen Brothers movie.
Right.
Out of respect.
Oh.
That's what I take it to mean.
Okay.
We're not even going to entertain this possibility for fun.
I'm now comfortable with where this has gone.
Yeah. So, listeners, I respect your standing for your principles there. We're sorry that we tempted you with a blasphemous question.
But here's what we're going to do. We are going to suspend.
Remake a Coen Brothers movie.
We are going to suspend the question of the week until we have a pile of quality questions. And that can come from us, and that can come from you. We're going to put it back on Facebook. We're going to hope to get your emails and all sorts of things, which you can find all of that on moviebs.com.
And when we're looking for questions of the week, the sort of questions we like, the sort of the ones that work well, as we've learned from experience, are not what is your favorite this or that, because then it's just right. A list of stuff.
Right. We don't want lists, and we don't want yes, no's.
Yeah. We like more discussion questions.
Yes. And it can be about movies, recreating a movie, or about your experience with movies. It really can be all-encompassing such as
it
that.
It can involve creativity and imagination.
Mm-hmm.
We have had good success before with some questions like this about what if you remade this or changed the genre right. of that or whatever.
We've
those
had
are fine.
Wonderful times. Mm-hmm. We're not mm-hmm. saying that. We've
no.
just we've run aground, and we need help pushing the metaphorical ship back into the ocean.
Right. So we'll suspend question of the week for a couple of weeks, and we'll gather up some new suggestions for questions. We'll brainstorm. We're not just going to leave it to you.
Right.
We're going to brainstorm ourselves. I'm going to buckle down and think of things.
Here's something that we're going to do.
Hmm.
Our friend Brian is going to go to an advanced screening of Deadpool with us tonight. And we're going to be like, hey, Brian, do you have any suggestions for question of the week?
We'll ask him for suggestions for questions.
And then you will remember what he says.
Oh, all right. Yeah. I assumed that was part of the assignment.
Yeah. I'll ask him the question, so I'll do my part. And then I'll totally tune out and then say, I apologize, I don't remember.
I just had a baby, sorry.
I'm only
Brian getting... just did too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, maybe that'll offer a new perspective now that he has two children.
All his ideas for questions are going to have to do with being
I got to tell
babies.
You guys, two children. Oh, my goodness. It's kind of boring. Anyway, so we'll just keep bugging you week after week after week on this show saying, hey, what do you think a good question of the week would be? And the easiest way for you guys to do this, like us on Facebook and then start telling us things.
Mm-hmm.
That's
you can
it.
Also email us, moviebspdx@gmail.com.
That's right.
And just go to moviebs.com. Hit us up on Twitter. We're at moviebs there if you want to shout out a suggestion to us there.
That's a quick, easy way. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Basically, we want you to do most of the work of the show.
Eventually, not all of it.
Eventually, we'll get to where the listeners are also seeing and reviewing the movies instead of us.
That would be nice.
Now, let's do that other thing where it's questions from listeners.
This is called
questions.
That thing where we take questions from
listeners.
And then we say our answer.
The question we've been asked by a listener, it's the listener Stephen Sparky Parker. Stephen Sparky Parker wants to know, if they one day banned podcasts about movies, would the show end? Or would you keep podcasting about a different topic? And what would it be? I think that if we could no longer podcast about movies...
What kind of future is this? Yeah, I need a better understanding. Why?
Like, why have movie podcasts been banned?
Yes, I would like to know that. It'll help me understand what we're going
to
do next.
I have to assume it's a Trump thing.
Okay, Trump is president, and therefore we cannot podcast about movies anymore.
Like, it's a whole dystopian future kicks into play at that point.
Okay, all right.
So assuming that movies are the only topic that's banned.
Right.
I don't know if we would. I feel like the movie thing was sort of the natural fit for us.
We definitely we couldn't –
I don't watch enough TV, and we don't watch enough of the same shows
for TV
to work.
So that would be on rare occasion.
I don't think we would. I think the show would.
I'm not. I can't. We don't eat similar food enough.
Nope.
Although that would be like a fun opposites thing.
That's true.
As far as food goes.
Yeah. Where we go someplace nice, and I say, "Oh, this is fine," but why does it cost so much?
Right. And then we go someplace terrible, and you're like, "See, it's fine.
It's fine.
Like,
this is good, and it's cheap."
Right.
Didn't cost an arm and a leg.
We could do that. What else could we do? No, we really couldn't do anything. We couldn't muster 1 hour of near this high quality level.
No, I don't think so. Without movies, we'd be lost. You would like to do a sports podcast, but I wouldn't.
Right. And even then, I think there would be stretches of like, maybe I should do that once a month or once a season or who knows when. I did have the passing thought. I mean, since you think you're a parent and I am a parent.
I don't think I'm a parent.
No, with the cat?
No. In fact, I am on the record. If I ever refer to the cat as my child or me as his parent, shoot us both in the head. I'm his caretaker, his owner.
By the way, from mutual friends of ours, Dogcat got some positive buzz that I don't know if it got back to you.
Oh, yeah?
But there was, yeah, the word on the street is people are liking Dogcat.
Yeah, well, I think
– just want to let you know.
I thought so. Mike, owner of Trouble, who I dogs – or I cat sat over the summer. Mike is sort of Dogcat's godfather now, I think.
Yeah.
Buying him presents and stuff. So, yeah.
My dog for Mike, Mike really – likes my dog,
mm-hmm.
But he's like I can't handle the attention. Like he does
want
too
a lot
much.
Of attention.
Yeah, he does.
Which is kind of the nature of dogs and yeah. certain cats I could name. Certain dog cats I could name. What were we talking about?
What would we?
Oh,
do?
A parenting podcast. We is would what not... you were about to
yeah,
say.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
No.
But I guess the short answer is no. Or
The show would end.
We would
the
not.
Show would
yeah,
end.
We,
and
the show would
just,
completely
yeah.
end.
The real question is, would you and I continue to be friends?
Well, no,
we
we're still
the
going.
Show keeping
I think
us
we're
together.
Still going to the movies.
We're still going to the movies. Okay, we just can't do a podcast
about them. I would
have
to write
them.
More.
Mm.
Yeesh.
That would suck for all of us.
Yeah, I really would. I've been so happy being lazy about that and focusing my drive on being such a wonderful parent of two lovely boys.
One of those boys is only a couple weeks old. Hard to know how lovely he's going to turn out.
Oh, he's 14 days. Oh, my gosh. I didn't get him anything.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well.
It's a couple years before you have to get him anything, like before yeah, he'll know that he's being given anything.
Oh, please. Like, yeah.
A few
I mean,
years.
Three. When he turns three, maybe we'll start getting him his own stuff, or maybe we'll just start, like, hiding some of Dylan's stuff, then wrapping it up and telling him it's his.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, I see no reason to invest monetarily.
You already did this once.
Yep, did it once.
And it turned out more or less fine.
Well,
just do the same basic thing, it'll be all right.
I just checked, and I barely have any more love to give. So that's going to be a little rough for that one.
You know, I didn't want to say anything, but it seemed like you were running low.
Yeah, no, I was. I realized when I came back to Portland, I was like, oh, I'll appreciate my friends and I'll give them a little love. And then it was like, oh my gosh, I got a baby coming and I'm tapped.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this is the long way of me saying goodbye. That love that I've given, I need it back.
That's too late for that. You should have thought of that before you sired those kids.
Yeah.
Should we play a game?
I would like to play a game.
Let's play a game of Pitch Me.
Pitch me?
Pitch me.
Pitch me.
Here's the music.
Pitch me. Pitch me. Now's the time we play Pitch Me. Take a couple actors and we'll put them in a movie. No, yo. Pitch me.
The way that we play Pitch Me is we have each thought of an actor, and we're going to get a genre suggestion from a friend of ours, and we'll make up a movie on the spot.
They just listened to the song, Eric.
I know. Well, in case some people can't hear music, they can't understand music. They only learn through spoken word.
You mean they can't understand lyrics?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like you tell them something, a song, it goes right in one ear out the other. Our genre from Jordan Ropp over at the Film Stage. He says hi, by the way, from Sundance.
Oh.
His genre suggestion, kidnapping comedy.
Wait a minute. Hmm. Did you tell him that I said hi before he said hi?
No, and he really didn't even actually say hi. I was just being polite.
Wait, who did
you
say
that
I
said say hi?
I told you to say hi to people, but only certain people, but I
right.
didn't tell you who those certain people were. Did you actually say hi to anybody for me? I really
should've. Yeah, a whole bunch of people I said
hi to.
Oh, okay. Kidnapping comedy. Who's your actor?
Comedy?
Yeah, kidnapping comedy.
Ooh, Angelina Jolie.
All right, and mine is Cuba Gooding Jr. So Cuba Gooding Jr.
Wow.
Kidnaps. Does he kidnap Angelina
Jolie? No,
should we switch
no.
it around? Does she kidnap
yes,
him?
Yes. I don't
what
want
does she want
any.
With him? What does she want with him?
This is the thing that we have to now figure out.
That's our job as the pitchers in the Pitch
right.
Me.
But well, like we need her to kidnap. Because a very powerful woman, that's great. True. Of course you can kidnap. It's not just a guy's thing.
Well, and Cuba Gooding Jr. seems like the kind of guy who could get kidnapped.
Yeah.
Like I can picture him being clumsy enough to fall into a kidnapping.
Does he
– is it mistaken identity? Does she think he's somebody else?
Should it be kind of like it's a little bit of a race comedy? We're gonna like because here's the thing that somebody said once. Somebody has at one point commented about how some African Americans can look like other African Americans at a higher percentage than other races is what people have said at some point in their racist
beliefs.
We're
gonna have to just say Angelina Jolie's character is just a racist.
Okay.
And
okay.
She, there we go. The black guy she's looking for.
Not Eric in this pitch.
Right. No. She's looking for a particular. But why is she going to kidnap him? Is she a bad guy? She's apparently a bad guy if she's kidnapping people.
Let's see. Let's have this be. No, this is her first time. Mm. She's decided because of.
It's like an environmental thing. Some company is poisoning the water. She wants to kidnap their CEO.
Wait. No, it's like it's not sports. It's either entertainment or no. He's a singer. She thinks he's a famous singer.
Why is she kidnapping the famous singer?
She's kidnapping the famous singer because her husband is the CEO, the white, rich, terrible CEO of this record label.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the singer is like the competition or whatever.
The singer's he's the headliner. He's the biggest singer since Michael Jackson.
But he works for her husband's label or another? Oh, yes. Well, why would she kidnap him?
To get him away from that label. To ruin
her husband. Ruin her husband.
To ruin her husband.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Because he just showed her that he had manipulated her when she was just a young, poor, loving woman into the worst financial deal a marriage has ever seen, and they don't live in California. So if they get a divorce, she has nothing, and he's going to make her life a living hell.
How are they in the music industry if they don't live in California?
They're the ones who live in New York City.
Mm. Maybe. Let me throw this at
you. Wait. They live in California, but he's manipulated the system so they're registered. Everything is registered in Arizona, which is evil.
What about this? What if
I like this so far? Are you going to trash all of this?
No, I'm just offering another possibility, another way we can go. What if this famous singer is with a different label? She wants to kidnap the singer to get back in her husband's good graces because their marriage has fallen apart, and she's crazy. So she's like, "Hey, if I kidnap this guy and make him come work for you, you'll like that, right?" And then their husband is like, "Idiot, that's not even the guy."
Does he say that right away? Like, idiot, that's not even a guy? And then they're just together?
Yeah. No, because now we got the problem. Yeah. Oh, now what do we do with this guy that we kidnapped who's not even the guy we wanted? By the way, the actual guy that they want should be played by, like, Forrest Whitaker or something. Okay. Like, totally different from Cuba Gooding Jr.
Oh, geez. All right. Yeah, I get you.
And so then Cuba Gooding Jr.'s character, he actually is a singer trying to make it in the business. So now he gets an inflated sense of like how important he is.
Okay.
He's like, they must have seen my set at the club last week. They must really think I'm hot stuff because he's an idiot.
Right. So everybody's an idiot.
Right.
Huh.
And
no, I don't know if everybody can be, but then the two of them learn not to be idiots together.
Maybe I just have Coen brothers on the brain, but maybe it all just gets screwed up and it ends.
Oh.
That's always a good option.
Yeah.
Angelina
Jolie doing comedy, doing a race comedy. That's interesting.
Well, a racist comedy.
Racist comedy. That's right.
She'll probably have to learn not to be so racist.
Yes.
She probably, you know, I bet she comes by her racism naturally. It's not malicious. She just is.
It's just ignorance.
Just sort of ignorant and yeah.
Is Angelina Jolie who do you think can pull off being a dumb character the worst? It might be her.
She would have trouble playing.
Like
a
it would be
character.
Near impossible to see Angelina Jolie playing somebody dumb.
Which is why she needs to be crazy instead.
Reese Witherspoon, sure. Yeah. Sign you up for another one of those annoying things where you're dumb.
But she can be crazy Angelina can be crazy.
She can really be crazy. She should be crazy again in a movie.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, so that's basically what happens.
Yeah, okay. Meh. I feel like that was like a, that was a, one of those bunts down the line.
Yeah.
I mean, but then the pitcher like blew on the ball and it went foul.
It's no abracadabra. The good part is that we can definitely get Cuba Gooding Jr. to be in it.
He's available.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, goodness, now that he's been O.J. Simpson, his star is probably on the rise.
Yes. Yes. So that's how you play Pitch Me. And we come to the end of our show.
I got to be honest. I didn't like that Pitch Me.
No? Well, you know, they can't all be winners.
I know.
The nature of pitching is sometimes there's a swing and a miss. Or it goes high and outside or something.
Good job.
Yeah. Hail Caesar, I like.
Hail Caesar, I like?
The choice, I didn't like. But
I liked it.
You like the choice that you made?
Yeah. Yeah.
And give us some suggestions for question of the week so we can get that back on track.
Focus.
Focus, everybody.
Come
including
on.
Including us.
Yeah.
Mostly us.
Whose show is this?
Yeah, but mostly you guys.
Right.
And that's it then. So, hey, for Movie Yes with Bayer and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I'm Jeff Bear.
Thanks for listening and good day.
I said good day.